This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 123, and I do have the air conditioning on. It's still a little warm, although I think we did get a break from the heat today. We had some rain this morning, and it cooled things down a little bit, and so instead of being 104 or 107, as it has been around this time, it is now only 92. So that is a definite improvement. And it was actually pretty nice this morning when I was coming into work. So anyways, it has been a good week. I've gotten a lot done this week on the major project that I'm on. Had a chance to see a few of my buddies this week, but a lot of them were gone because this is the big convention for my major client that they have every other year, and so lots and lots and lots of people are gone. For that, it's been pretty quiet around the workplace, but that's okay because I get more done. In the process of that, with everybody leaving last Friday, I had been promising one of my coworkers that at some point we would have a little talk about hierarchy and the inherent problems of hierarchy that you cannot fix through legislation or through rule sets or through enforcement, that there's the fundamental problems in hierarchy. And that's the reason that Jesus never set up a hierarchy, at least according to my interpretation. So I actually went in last Friday because I had had breakfast with a buddy and I needed to mail some stuff. And so then I just swung by headquarters because this particular coworker had asked me a question about something else on Thursday and we hadn't gotten it resolved and we both got pulled away onto other things. And so I thought, well, I'll just drop by and see if she was able to get that resolved. In the process, they were talking about elections that are going on at this big convention that's going on, and so one thing led to another, and we started chatting, and I said, well, let me just tell you about a hierarchy, because it impacts some of those things. And so I was not on the clock. She's on salary, but she's a hard worker and more than makes up for her time, and so I didn't think there'd be any problem, and we probably took a half an hour just talking about hierarchy. In addition to that this week, and I will be getting back to hierarchy in a moment, in addition to that this week, I read an article, pretty interesting article, in which the guy was bemoaning the developments in Web 2.0. And I think the name of the article was something like $1 billion isn't cool, isn't what's cool, or something like that. Basic human decency, now that's what's cool. And in reading this article, I thought, okay, well, see, here's yet another example of the basic problem with hierarchy. And trying to decide whether to go through this first. Okay, I tell you what. We'll start with some of his examples, and then we'll run back to his conclusions, and then we'll add in my little mix of hierarchy and what's going on there and why this is an inevitable conclusion. The first example that he gave, which was, I looked at it and went, well, yeah, but then I thought, oh, no, I guess that would kind of bother some people. The first example he gave was of an article that was written after Amy Winehouse's death. Actually, this is the second example he gave, but it was the small example, so we'll just do that first. After Amy Winehouse's death, there was an article that popped up on the Huffington Post, and it was tracking really well in terms of the search results. And the name of the article, let me see if I can pull it out here real quick, was, I love this, Amy Winehouse's untimely death is a wake-up call for small business owners. Now, when you read the actual article, okay, it's pretty well written, and the article writer does have a point. But the fact of the matter is, the person who wrote this article was trying to do one and only one thing, and that is camp onto the fact that people were going to be searching for Amy Winehouse's untimely death or Amy Winehouse's death, and they were hoping that news aggregators like Google would latch onto it and shove it up to the top. People would read it, and that would bounce it in Google's rankings so that you would end up with this spike to the Huffington Post. Because you could have written this article in a lot of ways and said exactly the same thing, but whoever had written this, wrote this article, was all about getting, well, okay. I did some research on the person that wrote the article, and they're all about branding and making branding happen, so I'm assuming that the strategy was, I need to get myself out there and get branded out there and get noticed. And so Amy Winehouse just died. So let me go ahead and camp onto that. And I will write this thinly veiled article about how to survive as a small business. And I'll make this big, bold headlines was where the first few words are Amy Winehouse's untimely death. And by that, I'll trick the search engines into getting my ranking up so that I get more hits. Now, this is pretty cold and calculated, frankly. Because whoever did this knew exactly what they were doing, and they were able to gain quite a bit of exposure by doing this. Because once it started popping up on the Huffington Post and some of the other aggregator listings, people were up in arms about this. Well, this is just crass commercialism, blah, 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 blah. Which, of course, that's what it is. Of course, because it's all about the eyeballs. So just kind of store that little example away. Now let's talk about the next one. The other example that this guy had in his article, where he was bemoaning the state of Web 2.0, was with a company called AIR, AIR NBN. I don't know what it stands for. AIRNBN.com. After I listen to this back, I will probably go, oh, of course, that's what it stands for. But anyways, it's AIRNBN.com. This is a pretty interesting concept. The concept is, if you're the type of person who's going to be traveling, or you have a spare room, and you happen to be somewhere where people like to travel to, you can just put that room up for rent, or put your apartment up for rent. And then people who are searching for an apartment can find you, and you have an agreed upon price, and they come and they stay there, and ta-da. Sometimes it's just renting a room that you have. Sometimes you're actually leaving and are going to be gone for a couple of weeks, and you rent your house to them for a week or 2 weeks. Honestly, the founder of the company said that when he talked to his father or grandfather about doing this, he said, that'll never go, you're nuts. Well, it has gone. And they have rented somewhere in excess north of 2 million rooms. They take a percentage off the top of it. They do kind of try to make sure that they're going to get their percentage, because they don't really want you communicating with each other, you know, until after you sign the contract, which that has changed, and I'll tell you why it has changed. Because supposedly they had like 2 million rentals, never had a problem. because their basic philosophy was that people are basically good. And so they were thinking, woohoo, look at this, look how well this is going, see, this proves people are basically good. Which I could have told you that that was going to get them in trouble, because you always get in trouble when you do not account for both the spirit and the flesh in humans. On the plus side, they had had 2 million rentals without an incident. I mean, that does show that people are fairly responsible. Maybe people who have the money to be able to travel, maybe they're the ones who are fairly responsible. But there was the story of a blogger. She didn't release her full name, but her blogging name is EJ. She had rented out her apartment while she was away on a business trip, had come back, and the person who had rented her apartment had trashed it. Trashed it. And apparently it wasn't just one person. It was multiple people that were in there, and they just turned the place upside down. And in fact, did a bunch of stuff that would be for no other reason than spite. So I'm driving, but I'm gonna read you a few of these little things because, the person who rented it was called DJ, and she says they had more than enough time to search literally through everything inside, to rifle through every document, every photo, every drawer, every storage container, and every piece of clothing I own, essentially turning my world inside out and leaving a disgusting mess behind. They smashed a hole through a locked closet door and found the passport, cash, credit card, and grandmother's jewelry I had hidden inside. They took my camera, my iPod, my old laptop, my backup external drive filled with photos and journals my entire life. They found my birth certificate and social security card, which they probably photocopied. Okay, they rifled through all my drawers, wore all my shoes and my clothes, and left my clothing crumpled in a pile of wet mildewing towels on the closet floor. They found my coupons. This isn't funny, but it's just amazing the length these people went to. They found my coupons for Bed Bath & Beyond, used the discount along with my MasterCard to shop online. Despite the heat wave, they used my fireplace and multiple Duraflame logs to reduce mounds of my stuff to ash, including, I believe, the missing set of guest sheets I had carefully folded for their comfort. One moment. Car turning off. Okay. Yet they were stupid and careless enough to leave the flue closed, or maybe not, so dirty gray ash now covered every surface inside. They did weird things, too. Moving things around in spooky, psychotic kind of ways. Creepy little things that I'm still discovering as I dig through the wreckage. Like cutting the tags off my pillows and hanging a painting of Paris on the wall that I had never hung before. Probably while wearing my now missing Ugg boots and Roots cap. Okay. They also took, like, Comet cleaner and just sprayed it all over the park. Okay, this is bad. I mean, they completely trashed her apartment. All right, this is not unexpected. Sooner or later, this is going to happen. Because if you do not account for both the flesh and the spirit, one of them are going to come and get you. So what's interesting is what happened later, because this is one of those Web 2.0 things, you know, it was going to be fine because people would comment on this border and they did this and they were good and everybody was going to be commenting back and forth and it's the big open thing and we're all open and we all share, yada, 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 yada. Except that this particular company apparently was far more concerned that they weren't just going to get people together and then those people weren't going to book the room. And they were far more concerned about losing their percentage than they were about ensuring safety. And so they kept you isolated until the contract was actually signed. And the blogger who had her apartment vandalized actually talked about this. She said, I've rented my apartment before on, like, Craigslist. And I know people that say you're crazy to do that. But she said, it's an expensive apartment. I don't make that much money. It helps. But on Craigslist, there's all kinds of notifications that say, be careful. Understand this can be anybody. Check people out. And there's all this information that you can check them out. You can call references. You can do things to make sure that this is not a psychotic person. Whereas this company had hidden pretty much all of that until you signed the contract because they were concerned about getting their 3%. All right, so, of course, the company has a response, and they're talking about how great their response has been to this and how terrible it is, and it's never happened in 2 million rentals, and look at all the things that we're doing now to help. We're putting in an automatic $50,000 policy that will cover any damages that are done. We're going to disclose more information. I mean, they're just scrambling. Question is, are they scrambling because they really want to make this situation right, or are they scrambling for other reasons? Well, as it turns out, they're scrambling for other reasons, which is the reason that they were featured in this article about basic human decency. I mean, when I'm reading about the fact they've put in this $50,000 policy, I'm thinking, oh, so did you get in touch with EJ immediately and say, look, we're going to get this fixed. We have a new $50,000 policy in place, and we're going to extend that to you retroactively to get this fixed. To clean, to do what's necessary, to replace your stuff, we're going to fix this. EJ wrote a blog several days later about this that they hadn't done that yet. What had happened was that she had gotten a phone call. And it apparently was from one of the founders of Airbnb, and she was talking to them, and he was expressing his condolences and all that kind of stuff. And he was wondering if possibly she could just go ahead and take down her blog post that she had put up about this. Or, you know, at the very least, after we help get all this cleaned up, could you maybe append it with the fact that we did good, and that there was kind of a good twist on the end of it, that it came out okay. Now, why would he be concerned about that? Because they're raising venture capital. They've already bunched a bunch. They're in the process of raising more. They don't want a black eye, because what this is really all about is not helping people connect. It's really all about finding the next Web 2.0 idea so that you can make a lot of money. And that's what this guy's article is all about. $1 billion isn't cool. What's cool is basic human decency. And he's bemoaning the fact that Web 2.0 held such promise that it was all going to reconnect us back together. And that it was all going to make us personally relate to each other. And it was going to democratize all these things. And then you would see this wondrous existence raised to the surface. When what's happening is the same thing that always happens. That in order for these huge businesses to succeed, they can't really treat you like an individual. They have to treat you as one of millions that are in this big bucket on their spreadsheet to show that they have lots and lots of eyeballs so advertisers will pay so that they can make lots and lots of money. I'm getting my mail. Which brings us back to the original thing I started with, and that is hierarchy. Why, when you look across the world, whenever you see human beings in charge of other human beings, why, when you see that configuration, as that configuration grows, why does something in that configuration always go south? Now, for for those of you who are saying, well, that's why Google is so cool, because, you know, their whole basic motto is, don't be evil. I'm backing into my garage. And I used to believe the Google line, too, until I started working with Google AdWords. And frankly, Google AdWords is a racket. And I mean, it is like cocaine. That's a huge long story. But, oh, anyways, I'm not even going to get started on that. So let's just talk about hierarchy. What fundamentally is the problem with hierarchy? And this is what I was telling my coworker. Here's the quick review of the formula, because I'm already in my garage. The first thing that you have to know to truly understand hierarchy is that all of us individually are in a battle between the flesh and the spirit. You have to factor that into every equation that you try to make about existence, because if you don't, the flesh will bite you. And that's what happens in hierarchy, just like every place else. All right, so everyone is in a battle. From the lowliest maintenance worker in that organization, all the way up to the CEO, the CEO, the COO, the CFO, all of them, we're in a battle between our flesh and our spirit. Individually, we're in this battle. Second thing to know is that the only thing that helps us move closer to victory in this battle is relationship. Relationship is the only thing that can help us. True relationship, where we're having heart-to-heart talks, where we're listening, where we're refining our behavior when we're given good advice. Relationship is the only thing that helps us grow, that helps us resist the flesh and live in the spirit. And honestly, it's more difficult if all you have is a relationship with God. The best is to have a relationship with God and then have close relationships with your fellow human beings, where you understand the dynamics of what's going on with the flesh and the spirit, and all of you are working towards becoming more spirit, and you help each other. That's the only way to improve the balance in your life between flesh and spirit towards spirit. And that's what you want to do, because that's what creates an environment of success. All right. So once you have those two pieces, now we can start talking about hierarchy. The problem with hierarchy is that hierarchy does not encourage relationship. Hierarchies are always about efficiencies. Hierarchies are always about one person or a small group of people setting the vision, and then everyone under them is just supposed to work towards that vision. There is very little, read that, none, regard given to or effort paid towards figuring out what each individual person's epic quest and adventure is. People join hierarchies not to discover their epic quests and adventures. They join hierarchies to be told what to do and to do it. So there is not within hierarchy an effort to really say, what do you want to pursue in life and how can we help you pursue that? Within hierarchy, there is instead an effort to say, this is the vision that we have. Now, will you come and do what we tell you to do? And the deal that hierarchy makes with people is, we'll give you money so that you don't have to be afraid about how you're going to exist in life. You come here, we'll give you money. You do what we tell you to do. Now, lest you say, well, some people say, no, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be working at this company. And for those people who try to make that argument, I have one rebuttal. I just say, okay, so you're telling me if you won the lottery tomorrow, you would still come back into work. Granted, there are a few people who would do that. But the vast majority of people, if there was another way for them to make money that did not involve them having to go to work, they would do it. If money was not an issue, our corporations and our hierarchies would empty out. So since the process of hierarchy is to assign duties to people for them to simply get those duties done, hierarchy inherently has to discourage relationship because you don't want your workers standing around and talking to each other about their personal lives. Because nobody gets any work done, and the hierarchy cannot prosper. So, in order for the hierarchy to prosper, it has to discourage relationship, and in a discouraging relationship, it discourages the one vehicle that is the only vehicle that helps people become more spirit and less flesh. What this means then is fundamentally, wherever you build a hierarchy, you can expect that there is going to be a growing degree of flesh as the hierarchy lives longer and as the hierarchy grows bigger. So you have Google starting out with the best of intentions, and the bigger it grows, the bigger it grows, the bigger it grows, the more you see cracks around the edges and you see the flesh starting to rear up. Doesn't matter whether it's a religious organization or an entertainment organization or a political organization, you will see flesh fits showing up all over that hierarchy because you're denying relationship, and in doing so, you're encouraging flesh. And so all the glorious stuff with Web 2.0 as far as a concept goes, in order to implement that, we needed lots of programmers. We need lots of customer support people. Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of minions. Those minions then start having flesh fits. And guess what? The people up at the top start having flesh fits too, because they cannot afford to be in relationship with the people they employ, because then those people are not working. So you end up with companies calling someone who just had their apartment completely ransacked, and the first thing they're asking them to do is, could you not talk about that? Could you just take down that blog post? Do you think maybe you could put a happy ending on this? Because we're going to lose a lot of money. Or you end up with people camping onto a sad drug addict's death just to get a higher rating in the search engines. And you can go on and 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 on with examples. I got so tickled this last Friday when I was talking to my coworker about all this stuff. And my coworker said, okay, well, let's say that you were in charge of an organization with 1,000 people in it. And I just looked at her and I said, no, it never would happen. Never, ever would happen. I would never be in charge of an organization with 1,000 people in it. Not going to happen. Because I know what hierarchy does. And that's not what my life is about. Won't happen. Well, let's just say. I said, well, okay, we can just say, but it's not going to happen. I said, Jesus never let himself get swung into hierarchy. Every time they were going to make him a king, he said, no, I don't think so. Pfft, he's gone. God, when he set up Israel, did not set it up as a hierarchy. He just had everybody go. Everybody do whatever you think is right in your own eyes. When there's a problem, I'll bring somebody along. We'll rally, get behind them. We'll go out. We'll take care of the problem. We'll disperse back out, deallocate the resources, we call that. Everybody goes back to their farm. Keep doing what you want to do. God in human affairs does not construct hierarchies. Man constructs hierarchies. And this is why I say that the early church made a mistake. When after the day of Pentecost, there were 3,000 people, what was the first thing they do? They started a commune. They started a feeding program. And then they decided, oh, well, we don't have time to study. We don't have time to read up and be in the temple. So we're going to get some middle-level managers, they call them deacons, to come in and insert themselves in. Okay, so first thing they did is they started a hierarchy. And Jesus never told them to do that. What he told them is go make disciples. What he told them was go find 5 guys, 6 guys, 12 guys, invest your life in them, walk with them, be in relationship with them. But of course, we just ignored all that. So, and when we ignore all that, you know, God says, okay, well, that's fine. You want to ignore it? There'll be consequences, but you just go right ahead. And then we ignore it for so long that we actually think that God has his stamp of approval on what we're doing because look at all the good work we're doing. Okay, well, you know, maybe there's some good work being done, but it's not God's way. Because God understands the problems of hierarchy, and that's why he never sponsored a hierarchy in Scripture. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.